Hello, innovators, explorers, and risk takers. Welcome to another episode of the Web3 with Sam Kamani podcast. I'm your host, Sam Kamani, and in today's episode, I'm extremely pleased to be interviewing Cyrus from ShopX. He is a trailblazer when it comes to blockchain and the e-commerce sector. We'll delve into ShopX's innovative use of blockchain to revolutionize customer engagement and explore how they're using NFTs to transform loyalty programs. This is a conversation full of insights on the challenges and the future direction of Web3 and e-commerce. Whether you are deeply involved in the Web3 space or just curious about the intersection of technology and business, then this episode is for you. Finally, nothing mentioned in this podcast should be taken as investment advice. Do your own research. And also, I do not run any ads on this podcast. My only ask is that you share this episode with a friend. With that out of the way, let's get into it. So Cyrus, it's great to have you on the show. So excited to talking with you, especially after our last conversation. You work at ShopX. Would love to learn a bit more about ShopX and what problems it solves.
Yeah. First of all, thanks for having me on the show. I feel the same way about our last conversation, having people like you who are putting out good vibes into the world, anything I could do to help. So yeah, right now ShopX is one of our companies that we incubated. So my partner and I, we run a venture studio. A venture studio is a venture firm, like a VC, but not necessarily a VC. We also put capital and our time. We're also operators. I used to work at Deloitte. My partner used to work in financial services. So we have a lot of understanding of what it takes to be an entrepreneur, being entrepreneurs ourselves. So ShopX is one of our incubated companies. It's in the blockchain space, trying to bridge the gap between Web3 and Web2 in commerce specifically. And the biggest thing we've saw in the commerce space was there was a CAC to LTV problem, customer acquisition cost to lifetime value. So if you're a DTC brand, you're trying to acquire customers, you have to feed the beast. The beast I'm talking about is Facebook, Google, or Amazon. So back in 2010, it was a great model. No one was really doing it. It was blue ocean. So you had a lot of ways to capture a lot of traffic, but it became very competitive. And tools like Shopify, WooCommerce, Square, and Stripe made it so easy for anybody to build a online store. Now you're competing with a lot of people and the customer acquisition costs are going up. Now, the pockets of Facebook, Google, and Amazon are doing great, right? But it's the small, medium businesses that are trying to compete, especially against the big box retailers. They're left out. If you don't pay enough money to Facebook, Google, or Amazon, they're going to send your traffic somewhere else. So if you can't convert and have a high LTV in that paradigm of building a DTC brand, you're going to go out of business. And I've seen this happen to multiple companies where they had down rounds or they just went out of business because they put in all the money into Facebook, but they got outbid by another bigger big box retailer. So they weren't able to capture that traffic. They didn't have enough money to pay for payroll. So that model is breaking. It doesn't work. It wasn't sustainable. And essentially what you're doing is renting customers from Facebook, Google, or Amazon. Yep. And this is where ShopX comes into play. ShopX creates a new paradigm. So it's not a customer acquisition cost to lifetime value. It's actually a customer revenue channel that you could create a loyalty program that creates a defensible revenue stream using Web3 and NFTs, but not like with JPEGs or whatever. The NFT is just a membership card, and that membership card has a financial value to it. Typically, when you build a brand, you need to have utility in what you're selling. Obviously, your product needs to be good. There needs to be some sort of connection, right, with the brand and the consumer, right? So you need the values and all that kind of stuff. And a lot of brands have that. But what they don't have is a unilateral financial exchange. And what I mean by that is that most brands are like, give us money, whether if it's a loyalty program or whatever it is. But with Web3 and NFT specifically, we have a bilateral value exchange, meaning that NFT has a financial element that makes people more incentivized to stay loyal to you, because as your company starts doing better, that NFT could be worth more money. So they're going to be promoting your brand and they see an upside in helping promote your brand on chain without any promises of a company to pay you, not pay you, or anything like that. So it's a really fascinating model that we've created. We're super early. We're still in the innovator stage. If you have innovators, early adopters, and then laggards and everything, we're still in the innovator space, but we've seen very early success with some of the brands that we're working with, where we increased our LTV by 25 times. And that's a significant stat. If you could hit like a 5-10x LTV, you're doing great. But 25 times, yes. And I'll attribute that to mainly the financial element that when someone becomes part of your loyalty program, A, they're going to want to buy and use their new membership program, yes, to purchase items because they love you. But they're also going to tell everybody about it because now there's a financial element to it. Now, if there's more users or more people that want to come buy these products, the NFT will be more valuable because there's only a finite limited amount of these memberships available, right? So it's a little bit of that supply game. It's not like Hermes, or I don't know if you heard of Porsche kind of creating this like scarcity model, yes, of, hey, you have to spend all this money and buy Rolexes and buy Porsches before you could buy in one of the new Porsches. Ferrari does this or whatever.
Yes.
That's cool. But it creates this elitist, and like it segregates the intimacy between the brand and the customer, and it becomes very transactional. But using, yes, Web3, we're all family. So that's a little bit about what we're doing with ShopX within Krypton Ventures, which is our venture, yes, studio. So that's one of our companies. And then I'll point out another one that we're doing.
Yeah.
Water. Nice. So we're doing a DTC water brand. And what we've, yes, seen within water is that a lot of brands like Prime, Liquid Death, or whatever, they've gotten some crazy valuations. And it's been great to see them build their brands. But I think what the thing that we saw that was missing is that what type of message are we putting out to our youth and their users, right? Where Prime is coming, where it's, oh, we're going to beat up people and we're going to be the best. And like a little bit of that sort of,
yeah,
move. Yeah, that's okay. Yes. And then we got Liquid Death, which is like about murdering your thirst and selling your soul to the devil. Partner, yes, and I, we saw an opportunity where we could create a water that puts out good vibes, like something, yes, that protects our freedom of speech and lets people be themselves without getting canceled. So, you know, we're putting out a water called Freedom 2.0, which is a way where we could protect the First Amendment. And in a day, yes, in an age where you're just being yourself could get you canceled online within reason, right? I don't condone, yes, any hate speech or anything like that, but it's about, hey, this is who I am. Please accept me for who I am. I'll accept you for who you are. So that's the sort of marketing we're going to be going out with, protecting our First Amendment, what this country was made on. And we're using satire and some funny ways of engaging that conversation. And our intention is to unite the world, yes, especially what's happening in like internationally, even domestically, yes, here in the US. We believe in putting out a good intention to bring unity to people through acceptance and understanding and protecting our First Amendment, rather than this ticky-tacky, oh, you said something that kind of triggers me. Okay, you're bad, right? And it's more about going back to how we used to be back in the 90s, predating social media, and how we could just be ourselves and people will accept us. And I think that's a great story to be a part of. And that's why we're incubating that water company. So those are the two companies that we're actively working on right now.
That's fantastic. So my first question is that you shared about how you have helped, or ShopX has helped, some brands increase their LTV 10x, 20x, or even more. Do you have any examples of what were the brands who did it and how they did it?
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to still call out one of our first brands that came in because he nailed it. He understood exactly what it is. When I say innovators, it's still a concept that a lot of brands have to understand because we're still running on the old model where we pay Facebook, Google, or Amazon. And that's just how things have been for the past 15, 20 years. So I'm going to call out Mac Park. It's themacpark.com. The CEO is Mickey. He's also the creative director at PacSun. So he has a big history being in fashion, in hypewear, and being a creative director. And he had an issue where, you know, when the pandemic happened, a lot of his business had to move online. And he wasn't really aware of how much the costs were to acquire customers and all of the ads and all that kind of stuff. So he was looking for a solution. He understood. He thought that wasn't an end game he wanted to be a part of, because then what you're doing is just trying to drive traffic. And his thing was very fascinating. His thing was like, I don't want crap customers coming in and buying things because I tricked them into buying something on a Google or Facebook ad. He said, I want people that really want to be part of my brand, but how do I cultivate them and build that community? So he was looking for something like that. And when we first introduced the blockchain and using NFTs to build the community, he got it instantly. He was able to take his LTV close to that 20x, where, you know, where people would come and buy a product, and he sells hats. That really put him on the map. He has everything. He has Kicks, Yeezys, and Jordans, and all that kind of stuff. But his hat designs are just so awesome. So the thing what he had is he had a community. He would sell his hats. They would sell out. But he had two problems. A, how do I find people that really cared about my hats? I wanted to buy my hats to keep the hats and not resell them. And how do I find people to buy my hats because they really believe in the culture, mm-hmm. the art, the creativity that I'm bringing, and not just some, oh, I'm going to buy a hat because I think this is cool and forget about Mickey. He wanted to go deep instead of wide, meaning I would rather have 5,000 customers that are so loyal to me and want to buy from me over and over again, rather than having 20,000 customers, but they all talk shit and they don't buy my products, or they buy it and they throw it in the trash. Because to him, his products were art. Right. And he didn't want someone just to buy it and throw it in a shelf. He wanted some people to buy it, rep it, talk about it, put it on a shelf in his house, in their houses and stuff like that. When he was working with us, he saw this. He's, oh, I could create a community around NFTs. Right. But the NFTs, again, were not JPEGs. They're not Bored Apes. They're not anything like that. They're a VIP membership into the life of Mickey and Mac Park. And they got exclusive access into his life, into his store, into products, right? And it wasn't even the discounts that really drove all of this. It was just the access to his life and what he was building. And those people would pay for that. So not only did Mickey create money from selling NFTs to build this membership program, and it's just a one-time fee, right? So it's not, I know people pay Discords like $100 or $200 a month just to be part of a Discord to get access to some stuff like this. He was just a one-time fee. He started anywhere as cheap as $100 and went as expensive as $600, $700. But that was able to create $250,000 of revenue for Mickey within 24 hours. So he was able to make about 10 to 20% of his annual revenue in 24 hours, not even selling a product. And on the other side, his customers were so happy, right? They didn't feel like, oh, I'm just throwing money down the drain, because that money they spent on that VIP is now an asset that they own, where they could sell to another person and either make money from it or recoup some of their money or all of it that they spent on getting the NFT to somebody else. So Mickey always has his community. If somebody wants to leave, they have to find their replacement. He thought this was a genius idea, and we put our minds and his mind together, and ShopX is a genius idea. So we put it all together and we were able to create something amazing. So Mickey's been able to do over $600,000 of product sales, of having his customers come back and purchase his hats and his other products using this VIP membership program he created with ShopX. His members are super happy because two things happen. A, now they have a financial asset that gives them access to these things. But if they ever want to leave for whatever reason, it wasn't sunk cost. They could get that money back. And the cool part about this is we didn't know this going into it, but he had a botting problem. Meaning bots will come and buy his hats and then go sell them in the secondary market. So he would sell the hats for $60 or $70, right? MSRP. And then they would sell them. They would go on the secondary market for $500. So what he was able to do now, using an NFT as a verification to see if the person actually has the membership card, and there is no gas, it's not complicated or whatever. Bots can't come in and they can't circumvent an NFT gasless check, meaning that I could check if I own the NFT. So we killed two birds with one stone. So he had a botter come in and test, and one of his friends that would bot Nike. And this guy was notorious botter that would go bot Nike and buy all the newest drops and sell in the secondary market. They weren't able to penetrate our system. So we filed a patent on that, actually. So if you're a brand out there that has a botting problem, please send me an email. We'll share all the contact emails and contact information at the end. But we have 100% accuracy in botting with zero false positives, meaning that not somebody came in to buy something and they weren't able to buy it because they thought it were a bot. It's truly a game changer for any brand that has any drop mechanics, or if they have the like limited quantity, like a Supreme, like even what Porsche is doing or Ferrari is doing or Mac Park was doing or Nike. So I do think that this is going to be a huge win. We filed a patent on it. We're the first to figure this out, and it's in production now. So we've gotten a lot of clients coming in, not necessarily just for the community aspect, but also not for the bonding aspect. But the cool thing is you come in from each angle and you're going to merge and you're going to figure out that, hey, if you came in for building a loyalty program, you're going to be like, wow, we could protect our users by preventing from bots from coming and buying anything. And if you come in from the bonding perspective, you're going to come in and say, wait a second, now we have a community and our LTV is going up. And that's happened on both sides.
Exactly.
So it's really a cool time to build a product like this. And when we started ShopX like 2-3 years ago, we weren't sure exactly where we're going to go. Like the blockchain and Web3 and NFTs are so early and so new. You have to put yourself out there as an entrepreneur. Just do it. Just go do it. That was one of the greatest slogans Nike ever created, was just do it. A lot of people talk and they have ideas and they want to do things, but just go do it. And you never know what's going to happen. You never know. And for us, we're just grateful that we were able to execute on an idea that we had. And we had some people that were interested in what we were doing. And now it led us to where we are today. And crypto is having a little bit of a resurgence right now as that market does better, then brands and companies are a little bit more open. They're like, oh, hey, this crypto thing, it's not just a thing and then it's just going to pass. All right, it's back. All right, we're interested. So we're seeing a lot of engagement and interest as Bitcoin and Ether have gone back up. So we're really grateful for that and excited to see what the next phase of ShopX is going to be over the next couple of years.
Oh, that's fantastic. I'll share a little bit about my journey, because my first startup was an e-commerce startup. We built the brand. We used to build the products, manufacture the products and sell all around the world and stuff. And I scaled that startup and stuff. But the first thing I understood, even in 2007, is to get people off Facebook, Google, Amazon, all these platforms. And get people off all these platforms. And then the only communication method you own or only real. So the people on your page or group or anything, they are not really your audience. They are Facebook's audience, Twitter's audience. So any of your following does not equate, because it's up to their mercy whether they show your or algorithm's mercy, whether the algorithm shows your post to even your own audience in your own page or group. So the first thing was that, okay, get them out of there. And what we did in 2007, there was no Bitcoin even 2007, is email. That email is your only true communication method, that if you keep them engaged, and had like loyalty programs as well, that if you buy this much every this many months and put them on a plan, so they don't even have to think about it of rebuying the product. So it's all about thinking about how to increase LTV in the pre-chain era. Now we have on-chain mechanics that you can do that. Is there a way to marry the on-chain and not on-chain side of things, that it can, I don't know, engage in email campaigns and repeat buying things, and how do you do all that?
There is. And so this is where I think it's good to think and have some temperance, because as for someone like me who's building, it's really important that we're thoughtful about the things, that we don't fall into the same trap that Facebook fell into. So I'm going to answer your question, but I'm going to give you a little story right before. Facebook, when it first started in 2005, 6, 7, whatever it was, it was a good product. It had the intention of connecting students and other people at first, and then other friends and family. And it was great. Unfortunately, the winning method to monetize the Web2 and Facebook was to mine people's data and use it against them to do things that they didn't want to do. Buy shit, right? Consumerism.
Yeah, pretty much.
Push down. Yeah. And then there is like a Netflix, I forgot what it was called, the social network or the other network. I forgot what it was called. The social dilemma, I think that's what it's called. They talk about real time what was happening. So I got to see, as other leaders at Facebook, some of the predicaments they were in, and they just went with the flow. They're like, oh, we're a company. VCs are giving us money. It's going to be okay. But look at where we led us to where we are today. And when you talk about on-chain and off-chain mechanics right now, I don't think are promoting good, healthy behaviors for society and people. Yeah, maybe for a bottom line for a company, it's going to make them some more money, and it has. But for how long, right? How long is that going to last? And we're already seeing it break down with the CAC to LTV problem where I was talking to you about that. Even these brands can't keep up, and it's only a select few monopolies or oligopolies that are forming that have all the money. And then Facebook could cater to the people that have the money, right? So there isn't a way that I think that's building a good dynamic for our economy and for our society going forward where we are on our off-chain data. Then you look at on-chain, you said, hey, how do you create that engagement with your audience? Back then it was emails. And the nice thing about emails back then, people didn't have a cell phone. They would check emails 24/7 and they had it right out their hip. They would have to go log in at a computer, not a laptop, and actually with a CRT monitor and a big tower case in yes. one aspect of their home. So they were checking it once a day, a couple times a day, once a week even, right? Yes. So back then that made sense, but we're in a day and an age now that we're just trying to attract people's attention 24/7 because their computer's in their pocket now. And I don't think that has a good effect on people's psyche, right? Mm. The way I look at life and building businesses is a little bit more holistic than a bottom line of, hey, can we just make money? Yeah, sure, we can make money. I love making money, don't get me wrong. But at the same time, it's like, how can we do it in such a way that's being thoughtful and mindful about what we're building around our economy and society? Because let's say if I make all the money, but everybody else is miserable, what good is that money? If I have all the money and no one else has money, what good is that money? I can't enjoy myself, because honestly, the purpose of life isn't making money. The purpose of life is to enjoy it through memories and experiences with the people you love.
Exactly.
So if the people I love don't have money or don't feel good about the way they're making money, or they're always hitting dopamine through social media because they need to get attention, then that's taking away from my quality of life. So I want to optimize my quality of life. Money is definitely a pillar in that. So the way we're looking at this at ShopX is, okay, we're at a point right now that we could definitely take off-chain data, on-chain data, make the on-chain data go off-chain and give, hey, we have all these wallets and we could trace back on using chain analysis to figure out how much money do these clients have. So then you could target them more so you could increase your AOV, increase your bottom line, which is great for brands. But at the same time, it's, I don't want to create a mechanism that it's always plastering the brand in front of a customer, right? Yes. I want it to be the customer decides when they want to go check their NFT or their information, not necessarily the brand. And the NFT inherently does that on chain, because let me ask you a question. Do you have stocks or any portfolio?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And you check it regularly or see how it's doing, or semi-regularly?
So, yeah. So maybe once every 2 weeks.
Yeah. There you go.
So not every day, not every 2 hours.
But it's on your terms. I get to look at my... So like the NFT and having a financial element on chain gives this sentiment that people want to go check their NFTs because there is that financial element, like always check our portfolios. And now the marketing could be inside the NFT, where you could say, hey, guess what? This NFT has access to this product now, or with this NFT, you get this, but you don't have to go send it to them. It's not a push notification.
Yeah.
It's a notification where a customer, whenever they go check their own NFT, and they check it more often. I have a lot of NFTs, I have thousands of NFTs, right? Yes. Not all of them are like what ShopX does, but I have ShopX NFTs through Fox is one of our clients, MacPark, Fear of God is coming on. Like we have a few clients that I own their NFTs because like it's cool. I want to be able to understand and put myself in the shoe of a customer so I could better build products for version 2, version 3, version 4, et cetera, et cetera. And I go check my NFT, and the cool thing is the marketing is there, but it's on my terms. And I don't think it's putting out this bad energy of trying to grab and whore intention to me. It's, hey, whenever you check this, hey, by the way, you're part of our community, you're part of our family. By the way, you get this extra perk or whatever it is. And yeah, if you want to opt into getting all the emails and stuff like that's what we're doing. We're giving people choice. Now you could opt in to have the on-chain and off-chain merge, but it's not through I'm forcing it down your throat. It's more through of how do you want to design your life? And this is something I'm trying to tell a lot of people. Be intentional with how you want to design your life, where you spend your money, what kind of companies you spend your money at, where you're spending your attention, where do you have all of your notifications set? Actually, I have all of my notifications off on my phone, including social media or whatever. So when I go check my phone, I check it on my time, not when Facebook or Google wants me to check the phone, right? So when people start becoming more intentional about their life, their happiness goes up. They know where they want to spend their money. And that money exchange with me, with the customers that I'm working with ShopX or our customers that they work with, they're finding that their churn is a lot less. It's a lot less customer service, and they're building a community of like lifelong customers. And that's essentially what you want to build as a business, in my opinion. At least that's the way I'm looking at building my businesses and my customers. And that's the intention and energy I'm putting out to the world. So yeah, I'm not necessarily going down the Facebook or Google. If I turn out to be a billionaire or not, hey, that'd be great if it does, but that's not my intention. My intention is to build a quality of life where I could enjoy my life with my loved ones, where I have the money, I have the psychological safety, but I also have the time and experiences and memories that I'm able to build with them, because they're also making money. They're also feeling good about what they're doing. And they're not tied to trying to get more likes off of Facebook or TikTok. They're not tied to trying to make more money or even just make enough money to pay for bills, because it's really tough for a lot of people today. Yes. So just being mindful about that sort of business that we're building, that's the way we're looking at how do you merge on-chain and off-chain. I don't have all the answers today, Sam. I really don't. But what I can tell you is that I'm looking at this with my heart. I'm looking at this with empathy and understanding of like how we could build a better economy for people to engage in. So that's what we're at. That's what we're about at ShopX, at Krypton. And that's just who Cyrus is. And hopefully that does make an impact on people's lives going forward.
Oh, that's fantastic. I have another question, because I saw recently somewhere that you're having some sort of a tie-up or collaboration with WooCommerce. Can you elaborate more about on that, please?
Yeah. I'm glad that you caught that. So big shout out to Dave Locke at WooCommerce. He's just been such a joy to work with. So Dave and I are crypto OGs. We've been in the crypto space for some time. I started in 2014 and he was somewhere around the same time period. And he's leading the Web3 division within WooCommerce and Automattic, the parent company. So Automattic owns WordPress, WooCommerce, and all the other Woo assets. About a year ago, we were talking, and the way I looked at how to enter the market for Web3 in commerce wasn't rather than, hey, let me go build my very clunky Web3 e-commerce platform. It's going to be a Shopify competitor. It's going to be a WooCommerce competitor, right? A few attempted to do it that way and they failed immediately. And that's because a company whose bread and butter and all their revenues coming from Shopify or WooCommerce, that's a lot of risk for them to ask them to leave that and go onto another platform with whether if all of the bells and whistles in Web3 are awesome and it's going to make their lives better and it's going to be cheaper, but there's still risk, right? Especially with a lot of people living on a paycheck to paycheck, or like they need to make sure that revenue comes in so they can hit payroll and they could pay their bills and mortgage and rent and all that kind of stuff. There's too much risk. So the way I looked at it was like, hey, the essence of Web3 was about unity and collaboration and bringing people together. So instead of trying to build a competitor to Shopify or WooCommerce, I was like, hey, how do I build a bridge that these platforms could connect into Web3 and get all the benefits, but at the same time, create that psychological safety for their clients that are using it, that they could still do what they're doing in their old Web2 habits, but also add another element of Web3 that could be supplemental to their current operations. When we started out with Shopify and WooCommerce, both of those companies own 50% of the market share of e-commerce, meaning that one out of two stores that you visit, either going to be on Shopify, WooCommerce. And that to me was a great go-to-market strategy. It's, okay, hey, if I build an integration with Shopify and WooCommerce and build those partnerships, then one out of two customers that have a web store can be your ShopX user, right? Yes. So that was the way we were looking at building our TAM and SAM. If you don't know what a TAM and SAM is, do your homework, entrepreneurs. Those are really important things that you need to know in building a company. But what we looked at was that, hey, if we build these partnerships with a company like WooCommerce, and what I love about Dave is that they care about what they're building. Mm. They care about what they're doing for their community and customers. We could have done this 6 months ago, but we did a slow and steady approach. We really understood what their customers were looking for. We've been testing the product for over 6 months with them and making sure that their customers are heard, it's safe, and it's also within what their intention is, what they're doing. And what they would really want to do is build the best platform for entrepreneurs or DTC brands to build their business and have all the tools to be successful. And ShopX is one of those tools, and I'm happy to be part of their story. What they're doing is so awesome at WooCommerce, being the leading open source e-commerce platform. And with us at ShopX, I know a lot of people don't notice, we're a nonprofit. Right? Because our intention is to optimize what's best for the community, not for shareholders. And usually when you have like Web3 crypto NFTs and you have a for-profit company, you have friction between, all right, are you maximizing shareholder value? Are you maximizing user value, which in the crypto case is usually some sort of crypto asset holder, whether if it's an NFT or a token or whatever it may be. That alignment that WooCommerce and I had at that moment, we clicked and we're like, oh, hey, we're here to build value for society. Yeah. And there's still ways that we can make money. Like it's being open source doesn't mean you can't make money. Being a nonprofit doesn't mean you can't make money, but you're taking into other considerations into how you're optimizing life. Like I was mentioning before, quality of life and the quality of what you're doing and the people around you are just as important as you just making it like all the money. That alignment with WooCommerce was really strong. And I'm really excited that we're going to be coming out with our WooCommerce integration this next month. And it's a soft launch. The hard launch will be in January or Q1, yes, sometime in Q1 2024. But that's just how the history of WooCommerce started. It was a meeting of the minds and an alignment of incentives and where our hearts were and what we wanted to build for our communities. And we saw that, hey, because we're thinking the same things and they have something that we don't have, which is an e-commerce platform, and we have something that they don't have, which is the Web3 integrations. And we're like, hey, let's put it together and let's make something happen. And here we are now.
Fantastic. My next question is around that, apart from ShopX, what other technology are you bullish about in the Web3 space, and what other project or startup you are really bullish about in the Web3 space? That's not related to you or ShopX.
Yeah. So I think we're in a day and age where we need to stop thinking in terms of tokens. Tokens were great. And I think that tokens...
Oh, yeah. I don't mean token price. Just overall, like...
Yeah, no, I understand. But I'm gonna get to the point where it'll make sense. Just trust me on this.
Sure.
I think tokens replace APIs long-term. I think APIs are fragile. They can be intercepted, right? And there's a lot of fraud and scamming that can happen with that. But the nice thing about like having a token and having, hey, you could program a token to go from point A to point B and impervious to any type of manipulation that comes from a third party, meaning that people come mine that data or whatever. So at some point, I do think we're going to see a transition where these tokens will be in that space. One of the companies that's doing it in a tokenless way is ZK Sync or zero knowledge proof rollups. We talk about scaling, and I'm not a big fan of any of these layer twos or layer threes because it's just adding another token, right? Because if you have a layer two or layer three, now you got to have another token to pay gas on the layer two, on top of the gas that you need for the token for layer one, right? And it just becomes so clunky. The user experience is just so far away from us being able to scale or make it sense for your grandma. And that's usually my limit test. Can your grandma use it? If yes, great. If not, then we need to do better. So with ZK Sync, what they're doing is they're building a mechanism where you could have the scalability of having a layer two, but it's not through a chain. And what they're doing it through is very awesome, using mathematical concepts that basically captures a snapshot of all the information that's happening off chain with a checksum that then syncs it back on chain. So they actually do put something back on the layer one. The layer two technically is sitting on a server somewhere else. But the problem with having your own server is it could be manipulated. I could go in there and change the data entries, yeah, right? That's why we're in a blockchain. However, because it has a checksum that syncs the server with the layer one, if you change any data on that server, that checksum between the layer one and the server breaks. So you know that data on that server is invalidated. This creates an incentive for whoever's operating the server off chain not to do any type of nefarious activity. And what that does is now that means all the computational power needed is off chain, which is what we're doing on AWS or Azure or any server that we have today.
Yes.
And then having the checksum only exist on the layer one. And the issue with all of this was like, if you wanted to do all the computational power on chain, that drives the gas price way up and it just doesn't make sense on Ethereum. That was the biggest culprit of Ethereum not being able to scale. And they had EIP 1559 and burning mechanism and all this other stuff. That was just a stopgap until an optimistic or a ZK rollup comes into play. And another thing that I'm really bullish on them is that it adds a layer of security and privacy, which I think is it's going to be a big topic, especially what's happening with the government. As a private citizen, I should be asking for the government to be public about what's happening, where as a public servant, now they're asking me to be public and they want to spy on us. So it's all messed up right now. So I think technologies like ZK Sync over the next 5 years, hopefully we could reshift that paradigm of what a government is supposed to be, right? To serve its people rather than spy on its people. I think technologies like ZK Sync could be part of that story as we make that transition. I don't know if it's ZK Sync. It could be some other cool entrepreneur. Hopefully what I'm talking about this right now might make a light bulb go off for somebody and they go build it. That's what this is all about, where we could build technology to make our lives better. So ZK Sync is one of the technologies I'm really bullish on. And not just ZK Sync, but any type of zero knowledge proof. So you got Starkware. I know Polygon is getting into the ZK rollup space as well. So technologies like that, I'm really bullish on. And then another company I'll talk about, I forgot your second question, but
it was about the company or the startup or a product that you're bullish
on. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So just that a vertical within the Web3 space or, yes. or part or an infrastructure is ZK rollups or optimistic yes. rollups. And then for a company, I'm really bullish on them, not necessarily for a long term, because every company has a purpose, right? And it's called Biconomy, B-I-C-O.
I have come across them. Yes.
Okay. What I really liked about them is that what they're doing is building gasless transactions for people to be able to do certain things. And they do all the gas automated in the back end. And why that's really important is like when you're in a metaverse and you're trying to do gaming, and this is where I see Biconomy is just going to change the game. When I go and I start this new metaverse or whatever, and it's crypto, NFT or whatever enabled, the first thing I need to do is have gas, meaning I need to go buy Ether and put Ether into it. That's DOA. You're not going to be able to get any type of metaverse or any type of game system on chain if you're going to have users go buy ETH and have the asset and blah, blah, blah. You get the game. What Biconomy is doing is you're able to do all of that, and they have gas reserves for the company that they could top up. And all of that is automated for you, that they have atomic. It's not an atomic swap, but it's like a swap. So they do atomic swap where they'll change the native asset into an ETH and buy versa, all for you in the back end. So as a user, all I got to do is set it, rip it and grip it, right? Or grip it and rip it. I could just grip my controller and rip playing the game and just have fun, right? That's what gaming is supposed to be about. Not about, oh, I got to go fight Ether. I don't have enough gas. I can't do this. I got to wait for a transaction. So I think Biconomy is going to be a major player in the gaming and the metaverse space. Shout out to them for doing what they're doing. And the Ethereum community was trying to figure this out for so many years. Hey, if I have an ERC-20 token or an NFT, why do I have to go buy ETH? Why can't you just take a little bit of my ERC-20 token, turn it into gas and pay? And that's what they figured out. So kudos to them. And I believe that they're going to be able to change the metaverse and gaming industry for the better.
Oh, that's for sure. It's like gas fees has been a pain. And just all the added jumping of the hoops that's needed for a non-native Web3 person to go and play a Web3 game, it is so painful. And that's why adoption lacks. The adoption is only there till they can get their token or the airdrop and they can sell and get out. So the idea is to get out, not to stay in, for a lot of Web3 gamers. So that's something that we need to change. Talking about things we need to change, we work and we are surrounded by people who are very pro on-chain mechanics, and we have a different point of view or how we view NFTs and blockchain and crypto and all those things, especially NFTs. Outside of our circle, people view NFTs very negatively. What do you think will change that point of view for people outside of the industry?
Yeah, that's a tough one to answer. And I don't think the people who want to hear what I'm going to say are going to be happy about this, but that narrative is just being pushed down our throats by media. Right. So what I could say is go try it for yourself. Right. As of most things, don't take the media's word for it, the government's word for it. Go try it for yourself and see if it's great or not. I personally have been buying and selling NFTs for 5-6 years. So I understand what it is. Right. And to me, it's just a data type. It's a data type that can't be stolen, that can verify who I am. Right. That's what it, but now they're making this seem like it's a scam. And yeah, there are scams, but there are also scams in the stock market and pink sheets. Mm-hmm. There's scams everywhere. Right. But it's about trying it and seeing if you could do something with that technology that makes your life better. And it has made my life better. I've met so many cool people. I've been part of so many cool communities. It's basically a community of like-minded people around a certain subject. You have like forums, like if you're a BMW or a Ferrari driver, you could go to Ferrari forum, BMW forum, and talk with like-minded people. That's what an NFT is. It's an NFT around some specific topic that you could talk, but there's a financial element now to it too, which makes it super fascinating, where forums didn't, right? You just got served ads. But now I have a financial element that I might be able to make money, or if I spend some time in it, maybe I lose a little bit of money. But there is that economic factor that NFTs bring into it, along with the protection of your identity. Because like right now, like people could like hack my phone and get 2FA and pretend and spoof they're me because they have access to my phone number. You can't do that with, at least as of today, with a private key and public key combination that you have with your NFT. I think the NFT sentiment will change as soon as the government or the media starts to change that. That's just how it is. And that's been the same with crypto in general, anything at this point. And what Craig Newmark is doing, shout out to Craig, who the co-owner, or he was the founder of Craigslist. He's a philanthropist now trying to get freedom of speech and journalism, protecting journalism to be the truth and going to get the truth. He's been putting a lot of time into that. I think that's going to be a really important aspect of our life going forward. with NFTs to change really for to the extent that you're talking about, the government needs to figure out a way how it's going to be beneficial to them. So then they could push the media to go out and be like, hey, everybody, go get NFTs because NFTs are great. And we'll see a big turnaround then. Until then, it's still going to be like a underground movement. But I'm glad that I'm going to be one of the thought leaders and the, at the forefront of leading the, and trailblazing the space. Like I said, so we could be thoughtful about how we're designing this to build a better society tomorrow, because we thought about, hey, what is the impact of building it this way or that way? So we don't fall into a Facebook and social dilemma all over again.
Yes. Oh, that's fantastic. Everything you said makes sense. But yeah, I do think about this, that whatever we say, people's experience has been a lot different. Like we often talk about security and safety and things like that, that it is on-chain mechanics is more safe, more secure, but people have lost more on things to do with on-chain. I work in Web3 and I acknowledge that fact, whether it's due to poor UX, UI, whatever the reason might be, people have lost a lot more as a percentage to the amount invested than in off-chain. But then off-chain mechanics had thousands of years to develop. This is all so new, such a new way of thinking. It's just nearly, it's said that over 20% of all Bitcoin is lost because people have forgotten their keys and things like that. There is no customer service.
I would argue we've lost more money in the biggest shitcoin in the world, which is fiat, the US dollar, right? Purchasing power and inflation is people losing money. Even though I still have $100,000 on my account, that $100,000 doesn't go as far as it did 10 years ago, where it's only worth 40% of that value. Like, I agree with what you're saying, but it's perception. It's the yes. perception that we're putting out to say, hey, we're losing money in crypto. And I'm not saying there isn't scammers in crypto. There are.
Yeah. Oh, I'm not talking about the inflation or deflation in crypto. I'm just talking about people losing finite sums of money that they can instantly see, whether they've because they've forgotten their keys or whatever reason it might be.
Yeah, for the user experience. And
so
I got you.
For the user experience side, it is a much poor user experience that hits instantly, whether it's lost because of a dodgy bridge that they used or something, a project used the bridge, or they were trading on CeFi and then the CeFi exchange went belly up with all their money in it, or it's like a rite of passage to a certain point that if you traded NFTs in the last 4 or 5 years, then there is a good chance you were rug pulled at some stage. If you traded in crypto for the last 6-7 years, then it's like a bragging rights in the industry. Oh yeah, I've lost money. It's like on a CeFi exchange somewhere. I've never met someone who's been in crypto for 5-10 years, maybe there'll be an exception, who has never lost a single dollar.
Yeah, I mean, it's true, but I could say the same thing about the stock market and the dot-com boom, where like these companies will come out and they had outrageous valuations without even selling a product or selling anything. So yeah. I do hear what you're saying, but I just think that point has been just overblown, and again, through the media. So like I personally have been, I've lost crypto. I've sent it to a wrong address. I've sent tokens to a different address on a different network. I've done all of that stuff, right? So I've gone through those growing pains as well. But at the same time, in Web 2 or in Web 1 or whatever you want to call it, I've also been phished, right? I open an email and then I lost things.
Yeah.
Right. So like it happens everywhere. So yeah, there is going to be that learning curve of understanding and being more accountable to your own assets, because there isn't a reverse button on crypto like there is in banking. So if someone scams you and a credit card or whatever, you could usually get that credited back, but you don't have a password recovery tool. And I think that's going to be the biggest key. Whoever figures out a password recovery that's decentralized and not centralized into one person, because that becomes an attack vector.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be the catalyst that puts crypto on the map and kind of dismantles the government in some ways, in my opinion, in some ways, or
that,
the feds.
That, and there's one more thing. There is customer service. There is no customer service in decentralization. Whoever figures that out, because I have friends, people who work in tech, who trust their bank more than they trust themselves. Because they know they're going to forget password. They know they're going to lose things and stuff. And they know they can go to someone. Even though the customer service would be horrendous, there'll be 2 hours on waiting. They'll be transferred from here to there. It will take a week or 2 weeks to get their account back. But they know that there is that.
But it's that lazy mentality that's giving the government more power, right? If we're just becoming lazy and we don't want to do shit and we just want the banks and the government to do it, they're going to take more power and our freedom away from us. People don't understand. I want to be independent and self-sufficient where I could have, and then the government serves me to ensure that we live in a society where I could then operate in a safe way with other people rather than, hey, I don't want to think about this or like, how hard is it to really do your password management and all that kind of stuff? It is hard. I get it because that's just the way they've been feeding it to us. But once you take that accountability upon yourself and being independent, it changes the way you view the world and the view of the government or banks or that kind of
absolutely.
Stuff. Absolutely.
100% I agree. Yes.
And to talk about customer service, actually, I think that will be the easiest thing to solve because you can create decentralized customer service. Yeah. You could create pools where, okay, I'll take Craigslist, for example. Yes. Craigslist didn't have customer service. What they had was people in the community that volunteered to go to ensure and flag fraudulent stuff. But now you have an on-chain element that you can reward people that go to. You're going to be able to create jobs in a decentralized way if once we get to that pray for customer service. Now, the hard part is going to be how do you prevent fraud customer service, right? So there needs to be some checks and balances that put into that. But I do think that's going to be one of the first pillars that fall once we get to that point. The decentralized recovery, that one's still, I've been thinking about that since 2017, man. And
I have
I'm
been
still
thinking about that as well. And I've talked with so many founders and we come up with all these theoretical, or we can do this, we can do that. And we've been, but every time it doesn't, like, even theoretical sort of discussion, it doesn't go far because it is a complex, because it centralizes, it gives a backdoor key to the project or the startup or the company, whoever is doing that.
The most interesting one I found was biometric or DNA, because you're the only person that has your DNA or your biometrics or whatever. But then that just creates another attack vector where you're going to see people going and knifing each other, gouging their eyes out to get access to their stuff, right? So, like, even people that were going down that route, but they thought they nailed it. I'm like,
WorldCoin?
Yeah, I know WorldCoin. I'm not a big fan of Sam and what they're doing.
So
I'm
they scan the eye.
I know.
And they do that. But then, as you said, but still, people are a lot more skeptical of giving their biometric data out there than they are.
Yeah, then it's somewhere, password. Right? So, I agree. I'm not a big fan of WorldCoin as of yet, but I'm glad they're trying something. People need to try. We're in our infancy stages in blockchain and Web3 and how that's going to impact society. So we're going to have to support one another and celebrate failures, because those failures mean we learn. Right. So there's so much tribalism that happens in this space. Oh, ETH is better than ETH Classic, or it's better than AVAX card. Look, I don't give a shit who wins.
Exactly,
right? As long as we're all learning and it's making our lives better. And you know what? There's so much in life and so many things to do that, like, ETH could optimize for one use case. Cardano could optimize for another. Polkadot could optimize for another, and they could all live harmoniously within all each other. And there's enough that goes around for everybody. But this tribalism needs to stop. I think that's actually one of the biggest things that could blow up this whole blockchain revolution, is this tribalism that my coin is better than your coin or vice versa. If we could all just band together and understand that, we want people to go out and do things and have the courage to do something that no one else was to do. And if they fail, let's help them. Let's reinvest in them. Let's help them do it again, because they learn. And as long as they have that intention to learn and make it better and iterate, I'm all for it.
Oh, I 100% agree. And you know what I feel like? One of the reasons why this tribalism happens and occurs is because of a monetary value associated with, because they want to benefit from the token price, so that if my token goes up, and one way I can make my token look better is by rubbishing another coin or something. Yeah. And that's part of the reason why. That's why I tell, like, guests on my show that, okay, don't talk about token prices. I don't want to talk about it. And then it becomes, then now the episode is timeless. What our conversation, it is not linked to whatever price and whatever price is going to happen. I don't care about that. I want the growth of the whole ecosystem, not just one coin for 5 minutes and then it's gone. So
and I appreciate that about you. I picked that up on our first conversation, which is why I was excited to do this with you.
Oh, thank you. And talking about the other point that you talked about, supporting projects and supporting each other, is there any way the community can support you if you are, I don't know, looking to hire, raise, anything? Feel free to share.
Yeah, honestly, it's just spreading the word, right? It's not just ShopX. We're all in this together, right? It's not me versus you. And this is the mindset that we need to all get out of, right? I have a lot of friends that are just, oh, I need to make more money than you or make this or have a bigger house. It's not me versus you. It's about what type of life do you want? Be intentional and design that life. And it's, I don't want to say us versus the government, but it's like us versus the corruption that's involved in the government. Government per se isn't a bad thing, right? It's the mechanism that has been built into it right now that's created the corruption that exists in the Federal Reserve, in the government. And it's like we need to band together and the numbers will be stronger. And so for me, it's for anybody listening that could help my cause and my purpose and what I'm trying to do is, yeah, please go read ShopX. I've written a lot of papers and thought leadership pieces on not just ShopX, but how we could use and leverage Web3 and blockchain technologies for a better tomorrow. And hopefully that creates a light bulb for somebody. And if it does, and if you want to work with me, or if you want to just do it by yourself, by all means, do it yourself, take ideas. You don't need to credit me. Or if you want to work with me, just I'll give you my information and you can share it with your community. Reach out to me. I'm always happy to talk and collaborate. And if there's something I could do to bring your vision or your ideas to life, I'm all for that. Whether if it's money for both of us or money for one of us, it doesn't matter. It's not about that. It's about how we could start dismantling the beast of where we're at today to make a better future for us tomorrow. Because like at the end of the day, like I'm going to be bringing kids into this life. And I want my kids to be able to live in a life where it's not like they're slaves or they're like in some weird like Terminator future.
Dystopia.
Yeah. That's not what I want to do. Like I want our human race and our society and my offspring and not just mine, but all kids to be able to have an opportunity to enjoy and get all the greatness out of life, of what life has to offer.
Yeah. Oh, that's fantastic. And on that note, thank you so much. And I want to wish you best of luck for building ShopX and everything else that you're building. Thank you so much, Cyrus.
Hey, thanks, y'all. Appreciate you. Hope to see you next time.
Thank you so much for tuning in and listening or watching this episode of the Web3 with Sam Kamani podcast. By now, you know the drill. Leave a comment or share this episode with a friend and leave a review. I would love to hear from you. So that's why my DMs are open. Reach out to me, especially if you are a founder building a product in Web3. Then I would love to hear from you. What are your challenges? Is there anything that I can help you or my community can help you with? Thank you once again and wish you best of luck in building your startup or your project.